Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, big joined by Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Good evening, America. How you doing, Cliff? How you doing, Ethel?
I'm doing good. Excited about talking about some of these things that are going on today, the things that are in the news, man. It's enough to get to you.
Oh, God, yes. And I am so happy to be here with you guys again. Thank you so much for having me. Let's talk.
And, you know, we've had a busy week this week. Tuesday or earlier in the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we were in California, and, you know, we were on the Mother Love show on Monday. On Tuesday, we met with Tony Breedlove. We also did a show remote from California. And then yesterday, we met with our attorney, Mark Garagos. And so, you know, a lot of things going on, a lot of support out there. You know, as far as Mr. Garagos goes, he has joined in on the team with Cornell Johnson in Denver to assist the Just Cause in the lawsuit against Darlene Martinez for that 200 pages of missing transcript. Mm-hmm. And so, Cliff, how are things going with that as far as what kind of progress are we making from a Just Cause perspective in support of the IRP6?
Well, it's looking like, you know, Mark Garagos is covering it from every angle. When we sat down and talked to him, there's a reason why they call him power attorney. The man knows his stuff.
No.
And, he's looking like he's going to have him pressed up against a wall. And I'm excited to see, you know, exactly how it's going to play out. So we're just waiting anxiously, and we'll see how it rolls.
Hey, and I got to give a shout out to Scott Osborne from Contending for Truth Radio Network, making this a couple of hours available on Thursday evening for Just Cause Coast to Coast. Again, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Got to throw that disclaimer out here as well. Clip and I and Ethel are not attorneys, and Just Cause Coast to Coast is not a program that provides legal advice. The opinions expressed by the callers into the program or the guests do not necessarily reflect that of a Just Cause Coast to Coast. So please contact your legal professionals for specific legal needs. But again, thank you for joining the program. Also, on Tuesday night, we had a powerful lineup. I mean, you know, that was a very emotional show. We did pretty much the entire show was dedicated to an exoneree out of Texas, Anthony Graves. And so, again, you know, we want to thank Anthony for being on the show. We also had Nicole Caceres on the show on Tuesday, and then Abraham Bonowitz on the show. Anthony is going to be appearing on the Katie Couric program next week, and so I know they're doing a shoot for that. Nicole will actually be joining us again tonight for about 10 or 15 minutes or so to talk a little bit about her interaction with Anthony in that case and some of the things that she's doing down there in Texas. And then we also have Abraham Bonowitz. He's the director of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. He's going to be joining us again tonight in about an hour or so, and we're going to spend about 10 or 15 minutes with him. So let's spend a little time talking about the IRP6 case. For those of listeners who are familiar with the case, you know, please bear with us. We want to bring those who are not familiar with the case up to speed, but at any rate, if you'd like to call into the program, if you have questions about the IRP6 or any questions or comments regarding any of our guests later on in the program, the dial-in number is 347-205-9620. Again, it's 347-205-9620. You can also follow us on Twitter at @A_JustCause. Again, that's @A_JustCause. We also have a Twitter for the IRP6, and that's Free the IRP6, the number 6. Free the IRP6, the number 6. So, Cliff, last week, or maybe a few days ago, a little bit over a week ago, mm-hmm. Attorney Gwendolyn Solomon, the appellate attorney for the IRP6, filed a writ of mandamus. So before we talk about that, let's give a little bit of background on who the IRP6 are, and what the case is about.
Well, IRP6 are six IT professionals who are currently incarcerated in federal prison in Florence, Colorado. They were accused and convicted of mail fraud and wire fraud, and they were executives of an IT startup company called IRP Solutions Corp. And IRP started in February 2003. It was marketing its flagship case investigative lifecycle software, commonly known as SILC. And it was marketing this solution to major federal, state, and local law enforcement agents. And prospects included the Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, New York City Police Department. And the IRP executives were convinced that they were on the verge of closing business with a major governmental agency until the business was raided by the FBI in February of 2005. They were raided by the FBI for allegedly scamming staffing companies. But what really happened is the company was responding to requests from the government to modify the SILC software and got behind on paying bills, just like everybody does when you're in a startup business. And in order to modify their software, IRP had to use temp staffing companies that specialize in technology professionals. So IRP brought these temps on board to work on the software, but when IRP didn't close business as quickly as it thought it would, that's when invoices went delinquent and allegations of wrongdoing came up. So this is primarily a story about vagueness of federal fraud law and how federal prosecutors can use that vagueness of the law to indict, try, convict, and sentence people who are conducting normal business practices. And so, you know, at the bottom of it all, Sam, this the IRP6 case is a corporate debt collection case that got over-criminalized by the overzealous FBI agent John Smith and the overpowered assistant U.S. attorney named Matthew Kirsch. And, you know, when they orchestrated the raid on IRP, Smith got a search warrant stating in so many words that, you know, IRP was a front company, and assistant U.S. attorney Matthew Kirsch then prosecuted the case, although there was evidence and expert witnesses that would substantiate the legitimacy of IRP Solutions as a business. And then you got federal judge Christine Arguello. She presided over the case, and she didn't give the IRP6 any reasonable consideration or benefit of the doubt during the trial. In fact, you know, just like you stated earlier, that we got missing transcripts that would show that critical rights violations that occurred during the trial. And, you know, the prosecution argues that IRP misrepresented their business position and that they never had a viable product. And the jury just really did not get a chance to hear the solid defense, but rather they heard a prosecution's narrative that was crafted to show crime where there were no crimes. And the prosecution used the vagueness of the federal fraud laws to achieve wrongful convictions of the IRP6 by convincing the jury that it was their intent to commit fraud and run a scam. And so to say who the IRP6 are, we have Gary Walker, the CEO, David Banks, the COO, Clint Stewart, one of the vice presidents. He's also my brother. Dave Zerpolo, who's another vice president, Kendrick Barnes, the CIO, and Demetrius Harper, who was the CEO of DKH Enterprises. For a complete insight into the IRP6 story, you can go to freetheIRP6, that's the number 6.org.
Also, Cliff, they can get more information about Just Cause also at www.a-justcause.com, www.a-justcause.com. And folks may, you know, wonder, well, what is a Just Cause and what does a Just Cause do? Well, a Just Cause is a volunteer organization. We were set up in 2005 as a result of the IRP6 case. You know, when Gary and David and Dave and Demetrius and all the rest of the IRP6 realized, you know, that the system is not necessarily cracked up to what, you know, we think it is. And we often talk about being naive to the system. You know, we're brought up and we were brought up to trust in the system. You know, we have the best system in the world. Attorney General Eric Holder was talking about that in August when he was talking before the American Bar Association. You know, we got the best judicial system in the world. Well, our system is flawed, and he actually said that. And so when the guys realized, the IRP6 realized that the system is flawed and they were being subjected to some things that just were not right. And then so they figured, okay, we need to establish an organization to draw attention to this and to publicize our case. You know, that in and of itself, Cliff and Ethel, will tell folks that there was no wrongdoing being done here. Because if you're involved in criminal activity, the first thing you want to do is cover it up and, you know, put it under a rock or something and
Absolutely.
Not talk about it. You don't want to bring attention to yourself.
Yeah, and then not only do you you know, it's totally insane that they would say they are having criminal activity, but they're pretending like their customers are federal law enforcement. Mm-hmm. They're flying to D.C. on a continual basis to deal with Department of Homeland Security. They're flying to New York to deal with New York Police Department. And then to make it even just more incredulous, they have subject matter experts working inside the building that are federal agents. I mean, you got people with over 20 years of experience as a federal agent. You're using them as a subject matter expert. Nobody would go through all this pain to be running a scam.
Exactly.
And you would not bring those type of people in to run a scam. And that is what really makes this this case insane, is because this FBI agent, John Smith, he had this information that they had gone to DHS. He had the information that they had gone to NYPD. He got a sworn affidavit from one of these retired federal agents, Agent Gary Hillberry of ICE, and he knew that the software was good. He knew it was a good product and that they were marketing it, not trying to run a scam. They were marketing their product and just hadn't made a large sale yet.
You know what, though? That tells you all the more that there was something else behind this thing.
Absolutely.
What that is, we can't put our finger on it, absolutely, but there's something more behind it than these men were running a scam. You see all the evidence there that shows you that this is viable software. So how are you going to go to a judge and get a search warrant saying that, you know, they're running a scam, a purported software? How is that possible?
Absolutely. And so when you have all this evidence on the table, and it makes you wonder, did the judge just say, hey, well, okay, I'll sign whatever you put in front of me? You know, it's totally insane.
That's what it
and
sounds
you start
like.
To you start to look at and realize that the whole system is just, it's really, really questionable. And that's what we're here for, to bring, you know, to enlighten the public about how the system works from our experience, from our research, mm-hmm. And you know, how to fight when it goes wrong for you.
And, you know, a Just Cause was set up in 2005 as a result of that. And so and since that time, a Just Cause even before the guys went to trial and before they got incarcerated, they realized that the IRP case is not on an island by itself.
Exactly.
It is a unique case. Mm-hmm. It has so many twists and turns in it, and that's why during this program we're going to dissect it. We're going to talk about different things. And, you know, tonight, when we dive a little bit more into the thing with this missing transcript, the writ of mandamus, the recent denial by the courts in the 10th District of the writ of mandamus. And we'll talk about exactly what that means and you know, how some of the things that led up to that as far as the trial. And like you said, Cliff, you know, for folks to get an in-depth insight into the IRP case and kind of get caught up on some of the facts around the case, they need to go to www.freetheirp6, that's the number 6.org, freetheirp6.org, or you can go to www.a-justcause.com, www.a-justcause.com. You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, here with Stuart Lopez, bringing education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. If you'd like to call into the program after the break, call 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. We'll be right back after this.
When does it stop being partly cloudy and start being partly sunny? Why is the word abbreviation so long? Are English muffins just muffins in England? Why is it called a washing line and not a drying line? Do fish get thirsty? If ghosts can walk through doors, why don't they fall through floors? Do you yawn when you sleep? If prunes are dried plums, how do they make prune juice? Why do doctors leave the room when you change? They're going to see you naked anyway. Do bald chefs wear hairnets? How much deeper would the ocean be if all the sponges were taken out? Do you believe someone who says they're a chronic liar? Why is sandwich bread square and sandwich meat round. Life's full of hard questions. Ask one more. You might just save a life.
I'm a mother.
I'm a father.
I'm a sister.
A registered nurse.
I serve my country in the United States military.
I'm your neighbor.
I sit next to you at church.
And my child was
arrested,
held in custody,
questioned without my knowledge,
exposed to violence,
witnessed to rape,
placed in solitary confinement,
unable to call or see me,
shackled to a wall,
beaten,
sentenced as an adult at age 17,
sentenced as an adult at age 16,
sentenced as an adult at age 15.
We felt lost,
isolated,
ostracized,
misjudged,
terrified.
And in the absence of all hope, my child took his own life.
And then I found the Alliance for Youth Justice.
They gave me the support and resources to get through one of the most difficult times in my life.
Now I know I'm not alone.
And neither are you.
Now we have a voice.
Now we have power.
In numbers.
In numbers.
In numbers.
We can make a difference.
There are approximately 2 million children in the juvenile and criminal justice system in this country. These are the faces of those families. If you are the family member of a child who has been in the justice system, or if you are someone who supports this movement and is ready to make a difference, visit the Campaign for Youth Justice at www.campaignforyouthjustice.org.
You're tuned to A Dust Falls Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, joined with Cliff Stewart, or joined by Cliff Stewart, I guess that would be the correct way to say it, and Ethel Lopez. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Great, thanks.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast Radio, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. So before the break, Cliff, we gave a quick highlight and overview, recap, if you will, of what the IRP 6 case is all about, what A Just Cause is all about. You know, in the last couple of weeks, we discovered the fact that there were 200 pages of the transcript from the trial of the IRP 6 case that were deliberately omitted. You have comments made by the judge, Judge Christine Arguello, that basically says that I am not going to expedite your request for those pages, and I am not going to make them available to the defendants. What do you think about that?
I mean, that is... It almost leaves you speechless, because how does a judge make the statement that basically I'm not giving them to you? Mm-hmm. And then on top of I'm not giving them to you, you don't need them. Mm-hmm. Well, what if I want them, it's my right to have them, mm-hmm. and how about I need them to put on a proper appeal? You cannot put on a proper appeal if you do not have the entire transcript, especially a part of the transcript where it's showing that your Fifth Amendment right was violated. And it's disgusting. And it would be one thing if she was, you know, saying, well, maybe I didn't deny him, maybe this or that. But it shows in the trial transcript, like you said, that she is saying, no, I don't think you need them. And I just, if there's somebody out there who can explain to us how a judge has that right, you please call in and let us know.
She doesn't.
And that's it. Because being crooked says, I'm the crooked judge. I'm going to get away with being crooked, and ain't nothing you can do about me being crooked.
A crooked little judge with a crooked little robe.
Okay, a crooked jacket.
and you know, but we laugh about that a little bit. But the thing is, this thing has such a nasty web that's involved here. And when you talk about, you know, Judge Christine Arguello, and you talk about the court reporter Darlene Martinez, and they are going to great lengths to ensure that this transcript is not made available to the IRP 6. And you know, this is talking about a Fifth Amendment violation that we're talking about here. A Fifth Amendment violation that once it is discovered that, yes, that did actually happen on that sidebar that occurred, then, you know, this thing is thrown out. Cliff, what happened as far as that sidebar is concerned, and what led up to that?
Well, you had the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, and he basically lays out how his timeline on this, on the prosecution. He says, these are my witnesses, going to take about 3 weeks for me to get through them. Well, he finishes in about a week and a half. So you've got the whole timeline is thrown off because the defense is saying, well, after you finish with your 3 weeks, we're going to start. Well, the issue with him ending that early is now the defense has to scramble because they were dealing with these law, these federal agencies out in D.C. and New York, you know, on the Eastern Seaboard. You have the scheduling issue of now people are saying, well, I've scheduled this amount of time off from my job to go to this trial. I've scheduled my hotel. I've scheduled my plane ticket. So now you have where they're saying, okay, we got to scramble and see if we can reschedule them. And then on top of that, you know, with that aside, actually, you did have some local witnesses, you know, at the Colorado Bureau of Investigations. You had Colin Reese. He was called to testify. And what happened is when it was time for him to testify, he didn't show up at court. He did not. The subpoena had been served. It had been served in time. Everything legally as far as subpoena went was in place. He just didn't show up. When the defense called him, say, hey, you're supposed to be in court. Well, you know, I'm at my desk. I'm at work. You know, I'll see how that happens or if I'll be able to get there. Well, when this is brought to the judge's attention, what would happen is a judge is supposed to say that you are supposed to be here testifying in this case. If you don't show up, I will have you in contempt of court, and I will send the federal marshal arrest you. No, she tells the IRP 6, well, it's your responsibility to get your defendants here.
That's not the only time that happened.
No. And then when one of the retired FBI agents, Agent Moen, who
I don't think he was retired. He was still active. He was active.
Oh, okay. So he was active. And when the process server tried to serve him the subpoena, lo and behold, another FBI agent shows up at the place where he was trying to be served and says, you're not going to serve him. You're going to let it go. And if you have any questions, go talk to the prosecutor. How does that happen?
And you know what else, Cliff, not to interrupt you, but you know what else on that is that it became readily apparent that Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch was messing around with the witnesses in this situation.
Exactly.
I mean, because it came out in the court.
In the middle of court, he tells the judge, well, Judge, I've been in touch with this FBI agent, Moen. He's out hunting.
He's out hunting.
So he's not going to be available. First off, how do you know where he's at?
And why?
Why are you talking to the defense's witness?
Even though it was obvious that he was probably going to be what they classify as a hostile witness.
Right, he was going to be a hostile witness.
But he was still a defense witness just the same.
Exactly. He was a witness. He was a witness for the other side. Now, if you or I stood in open court and said, hey, Judge, yeah, you know, the prosecutor, he had a witness, but I went to his house and I talked to him. He's not going to show up today. That is what is called witness tampering.
Exactly.
And you'd be in prison for that. The prosecutor gets up in open court and says, yeah, I've been in touch with him. He let me know he's going hunting. He's not available. How is that not witness tampering? It shows how twisted the system is that a prosecutor can be in touch with your witness and the judge knows it and does absolutely nothing about it.
And that's it. And if she wasn't crooked, she would have called them to the carpet on that
Absolutely. Then
and there.
Absolutely. Any judge's position would have been you have tampered
with
the other side's witness. You're in contempt. We're going to bring charges against you.
So let's cut to the chase. As far as that sidebar is concerned, it seems like, and it doesn't seem like this is exactly what happened.
Mm.
The prosecution played a game in saying that, well, my case in chief is going to take this amount of time,
mm-hmm.
and then he knows that people are going to have to be traveling. They're not going to be able to show up tomorrow. If I rest my case today,
exactly.
Got people coming from Washington, D.C., New York, and then he already knows that they've sent somebody hunting, and they sent somebody else to work and said, just go to work, and that these people are not going to be available. So you have a situation where the defense is now in a position where they don't have enough witnesses to fill up the day, and Judge Arguello begins to admonish them and begins to give them a hard time about not having witnesses there. Then right. she says that if you don't have witnesses here, one of you are going to have to take the stand or I will rest your case for you. Mm. And so that in and of itself constituted the compelling them to take the stand.
Right, exactly. And then it, first off, you have several issues here. You have the fact that the judge is not helping to get the witnesses here. I mean, the same FBI Moen, when they first tried to serve him, I mean, he wasn't out of town. He wasn't out hunting. They tried to serve him at his job. He was dodging the process server. Then you have the prosecutors in touch with him, and the judge does nothing about those issues. Then you have CBI Colin Reeves. He's just not showing up. The judge tells the defense, it's your responsibility. You figure it out, when, in fact, it's her responsibility. But then she tells them that I will close your case if you don't present another witness. And on top of this, the expert witness, Andrew Alborelli, which is another side note that we'll get to, she does not allow him to testify.
Does not allow him to testify.
So you have her not ensuring that the subpoenaed witnesses show up. You have her refusing an expert witness. Then you have her threatening the defense that if you don't bring a witness, I'm going to close your case. And so...
So they come back from break.
Right, they come back from break. Ken Barnes takes the stand. He invokes his Fifth Amendment right. It causes this whole issue with the whole trial. And then she calls another break, and they say, we want the transcript where you told us one of us had to take the stand.
Exactly.
And that's where she starts making all these statements. Well, okay, court reporter, yeah, get that. Give it to him. Then a break goes on, and suddenly – that's not available.
Well, they provide a copy
it's not
the
complete.
Sidebar.
It does not have the sidebar. And then when they begin to make the request, and that's when she starts saying, okay, well, how many pages are missing? About 200. Well, I don't see any need that you need. You do know
well,
the need.
I'm gonna read right here, Cliff, where this exchange went on between Judge Christine Arguello and court reporter Darlene Martinez. So on the last day of trial, the IRP6, the judge asked, well, is there any other business before we bring the jury back in? Mm-hmm. And Clinton Stewart, he raised the issue, yes, Your Honor, the request that we have made on a couple of occasions mm-hmm. for this transcript. Well, you know, the judge, Judge Arguello, says, first of all, the unedited version of the transcript cannot be used for any purpose. Whoa. And then she asked Martinez, how many pages is it? So Darlene Martinez, she affirms that over 200 pages. Do you really? Over 200 pages. Now, we've talked to attorneys, and they've said that there's no way that sidebar can account for 200 pages.
Exactly.
So there are 200 pages that constitute some other things that somebody's
trying to cover up. That's right.
And so then Judge Arguello goes on and says, over 200 pages, for no purpose that I can see, that would be served by having that at this time. I'm not going to have it expedited. An unedited version of the transcript, and I'm not going to have the unedited version of the transcript delivered to the defendants, talking about the IRP6. So, you know, you have this situation. That's why we have Cornell Johnson and Mark Garagos and Tina Glandian out of L.A., and Cornell, of course, is out of Denver.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's why they're on board as far as the lawsuit that a just cause has.
Right.
For the purposes of representing the public. But, you know, these transcripts, these records should be made available to everyone. Anybody walking off the street,
right.
they want to find out some information about that.
Right.
They should be able to go in there
right.
and get
They
it.
Should yeah. be able to yeah. see the entire case. But instead, you have a judge who said, I'm not going to make it available. Who gives her that type of jurisdiction?
But the thing
Where does
is
she
too,
come in?
Not only that, the purpose of it being served, why wasn't that a decision made by the defendants?
Exactly. You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, where we bring education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. If you'd like to call into the program, call 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. We will be going to the phone when we return right after this.
Today, innocent Americans are standing trial for crimes they didn't commit. Today, innocent Americans are writing for help from a prison cell. Today, hundreds of Americans have been exonerated of crimes they didn't commit. Researchers believe that at least 40,000 innocent Americans still sit behind bars. For them, the answers do not come easy. A Just Cause seeks true balance and accountability in the judicial process, ensuring that innocent men and women are not convicted and sentenced to prison for trivial, obscure acts that are otherwise not seen as crimes. For more information on how A Just Cause may help you or how you can get involved to stop overcriminalization of innocent Americans, visit www.a-justcause.com or call 855-529-4252. That's 855-529-4252.
Back to the program. This is A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We're coming to you via the Contending for Truth Radio Network. Thanks, Scott Osborne. Hey, tonight we're diving deep into the IRP 6 case. That song you just heard was written by Tiffany Stewart and Cole Stewart, written by Cole Stewart, actually, and performed by Tiffany Stewart. Tiffany is the daughter of Clinton Stewart, who is one of the IRP 6. And then Cole is actually the son of our co-host, Cliff Stewart. Okay, so if you'd like to dial into the program, 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. Let's talk a little bit about that writ of mandamus. So attorney Gwendolyn Solomon, she's the appellate attorney for the IRP 6. She filed the writ of mandamus in the federal court. Basically, what that's about is to direct the federal court reporter to release those 200 pages that we were talking about before the break. You know, this is missing transcripts. I like to say it's omitted transcripts. And when you go back to what we were talking about before the break, where the judge said, I'm not going to make it available, I don't see any reason for it to be used, I don't see any report. So to me, that's not, it's not missing. It's actually omitted. You know, one of the things that was brought out in the writ of mandamus itself, it talks about the fact that the Guide to Judiciary Policy, Volume 6, it talks about an automated court reporting application that automates the submission and archiving of court reporter data. So that would stand to reason, and I believe, oh no, it's been confirmed that Darlene Martinez was using a system like that. Is that not correct?
As far as I know, absolutely. And when you, you know, there's no systems of, okay, I'm just sitting there and I'm taking handwritten notes.
Exactly.
Because everybody knows that type of system is flawed. That's why they put the electronic systems in place.
And the guys had a monitor
there
at the witness station or at the defense table.
Right, where they could see,
It real time.
What was being transcribed. And so that's why they know, and we know, and the judge knows, and Darlene Martinez knows.
Something stinks.
Right. I mean, the transcript exists. And deliver it. Give it up.
Yep, that's right. Callers, 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we're talking tonight about the IRP 6 case. We're going to go to the phones. Cliff, who do we have?
We have Harriet Lerman from Voice of the People. Are you with us, Harriet?
Oh, yes. I've been waiting.
Oh, Harriet, how are you?
I'm fine, my friend.
This is Sam. Good to hear your voice.
Sam and Cliff and Ethel, it's nice to hear all three of you.
And you too. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, we had been on.
Well, you know, I've been supporting you for quite a long time. It's been months that I've been supporting you. And
Absolutely.
I really want to thank you. This is nice that you've got your own radio show now.
Thank you.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, we were on Harriet's show, Voice of the People, previously. She, you know, she honored us by giving us a chance to tell the story of the IRP 6 there. And, you know, we really appreciated Harriet. And, you know, when we got the opportunity to say, hey, you know, we were offered a spot to you know, do a show not only about the IRP 6, but Just Cause and what Just Cause offers and what we're after. And so, you know, we took them up on it.
Let me just say this to you, I want to thank
Nate Perkins for introducing me to Olivia Hodges and to all of you and getting me involved in this situation. I've heard all of what you have had to say tonight. It seems like you're still stuck in the mud, and you can't seem to get out, and you need some chains. And the judge and the missing transcripts are still missing. It seems that you seem to have gotten a lawyer, and somehow or another you've been trying to get them to reveal them. But I want you to know that there are people out there who are now starting to take notice in the world of criminal justice. One is the private prisons. The other is that I believe there will be an investigation into the criminal justice system. And I think, three, I'm going to be having some people on who are going to be talking about people who are wrongly put in jail and the youth that go to jail. And
that's right.
Something needs to be done because it's costing the taxpayers millions and millions of dollars. And there are greedy people out there who own these prisons who are making lots of money and powerful lobbyists who are sitting in Washington and paying these congressmen to keep their mouths shut. As you remember, we tried to contact the Black Caucus. We tried to contact some of the congressmen, and they said, we can't get involved. Now, they have 25 pages on your story, but they won't get involved. Now, that something sounds a little fishy to me, too. They said the Constitution says that they can't get involved, and since they are congressmen. People have to know that. People have to understand why your congressman is doing nothing, my congressman is doing nothing. It's because they're not allowed to.
But, you know, Harriet, when it becomes a constitutional issue, we're going to compel them to get involved. I mean, it takes voices like yours, and you have a lot of contacts, and I know that you've been facilitating and advocating on behalf of the IRP 6 and a Just Cause.
Absolutely.
And I know because of your activity as an elected official at one time yourself. And I know
that's
that
right.
you are pushing to get things done, and that's why we are pushing as well. I mean, you have to rely on you know, sometimes you go back and you hear like the quote by Martin Luther King Jr. where he says, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere."
Yeah.
And then also Bishop Desmond Tutu when he says that, you know, if you remain neutral in situations of justice, you've sided with the oppressor. And so, you know, it's
that's
like,
right.
I think, like you said, there are people that are starting to take note.
Mm-hmm.
And even just, I mean, the fact that A Just Cause is on the air now a couple of times a week, we're getting ready to expand that as well. And, you know, people are taking note. And if you notice that there are not a lot of people, Harriet, that are on the air talking about the things like we are talking about.
Oh, absolutely. I'm like one of them. I'm one of the very few. And
yeah,
it really bothers me that because the national media, the national networks will not talk about it.
That's no, funny. And, you know, the things that they should be addressing, the things that they should go after, you know, they'll onesie-twosie, you know, hit a case here, a point, but there's no follow-up. There's no why did this go wrong? Why is the legislation allowing this type of thing to happen?
Exactly.
That is where the issue is.
Well, you know the
that.
Case that's happening here in Florida with Melissa Alexander, this young
yes.
black woman.
Yes.
Well, you do know that she made national news.
Yep.
And you do know she was on the Today Show. And,
and
she's probably going to have a new trial.
Right.
Yeah. And there are legislators here in Florida who are going to be changing the law.
Well, and you know,
investigating Stand Your Ground, too.
I think, Harriet, what happens in cases even like that, you have situations where people who are in position of power, people who are elected officials, people who are in law enforcement, those who are in the prosecution offices or the DA offices around the country, they don't expect to have organizations like A Just Cause, or they don't expect to have a show like, you know, Voice of the People there in Florida that's going to keep those types of stories alive. And when you keep them alive, you keep them right there in the face of the people, then there's no way people can ignore it.
And I asked Olivia to make sure you keep she sent me the update about the judge and the court reporter. I put that on the show immediately on Tuesday. I will continue to do updates if you continue to tell me what is happening in your area, and that's very important because it will help very heavily. I'm going to have a state senator on this week, and she is a lawyer, but she deals with juveniles who go to jail, and she deals with a lot of cases. And so I'm talking to her. I will be having the president of the AFL on, who are deadly against private prisons. They want them shut down.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And
so
I think
there
that's
you go.
Right.
I mean, there are lots of us behind you. Lots of us. Why
you
have a crooked judge, I don't know. And you know what? I talked to two lawyers after I saw youth folks. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, there were three lawyers. I said to them, what is wrong with the system? It's not working. You just spout off laws and you spout off statutes and you ramble them on and nobody pays attention because they don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest with you, some of the things you do just don't sound fair. Well, we are lucky people, he said. They said, well, you're lucky. You live in America. You have the best judicial system in the world, and you should be thankful because it could be a lot worse.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that.
I want you to know that came from lawyers.
And
now,
you know,
I was a state legislator, as you know, and I promulgated laws.
Right.
But one of the things they need to do in every state legislature and in Congress, they should be doing the same thing. They should be reviewing laws. And
that's
every
right.
state
that's
should be reviewing laws. They're old, and some of them don't work.
Right.
And just like you say, you know, you have, people who make the laws, and you have them coming on your show. But you think about even what Attorney General Eric Holder said. He got up, he made this wonderful speech, said the things that need to be changed and all. But now where is the follow-up? What is he doing after that? Where is he at saying, you know, I made this speech 2 months ago, and now we've done our investigation, and this is what we found. Where is the follow-up? I mean, he came out, and it's like, all you did was try to appease the American people. Show us more. Show us more than just a statement. Show us what you're really going to do about it.
And, Harriet, on that thing about
we need some Congress. What? I'm sorry?
Go ahead, Harriet.
I think we need to get some congressmen with backbones like Alan Grayson, who's my friend, and he's been on my show. And let me tell you, if it wasn't for him, we'd be in war with Syria. You have to understand, people like him who tells them off, who writes laws that are so phenomenal. He fights for these people, and he really is the man to go to. Now that Cory Booker's been elected, and Cory Booker's on our side, I think. At least that's what they say until they get elected, and then they get to Congress and they change.
Yeah.
That's the problem. They get so corrupted along the way. And every person I have talked to lately is so disappointed, not only with the Republicans, but the Democrats, because they all believe they're crooks.
That's right.
They don't care one thing about you.
That's it.
Well, Harriet, I want to, again, say thank you for coming into the show tonight. It was great to hear your voice. And, again, thanks for having us on your show. This is Harriet from Voice.
I want you back on again. I'd like you back on again to give us some positive input later on when you know something spectacular that's going to happen, especially going after that court reporter and the judge.
Exactly.
And you know what, Harriet, we need to expose them.
You know what, Harriet? We always keep a positive outlook here at A Just Cause, and we look at the fact that, you know, when they deny something or if something happens, it's just part of the process. You know, it's a matter of record, and it's going to be part of the matter of record to help to facilitate change. And so, you know, that's just all part of the plan as far as, you know, it's destined, so to speak. And so we don't hang our heads down. We're going to stay in the fight. We're going to continue.
I know you don't. I know you guys are very positive, and you are. May I say to the people who are listening that Just Cause and the community, I have never met a group of people in my entire life that have come together and supporting these six people and their families and their children, and they have worked so diligently together to fight to get freedom and justice for these people who were wrongly accused. That is amazing what you all have done. And now you've started this radio show, you have started Just Cause, you have a wonderful organization, and you have great people who are very articulate, and that's what I like about Sam and Cliff and certainly Ethel. You're all fantastic.
Well, thank you, Harriet. Thank you. Hey, Harriet, one other thing before you go, and we have to transition to another segment of the program, but when you were talking about the corporate enterprise of prisons, David Banks, one of the IRP6, he just did a heartfelt write-up as to, you know, it is a waste of time on some of the stuff that they're doing as far as running a prison camp. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to ask, we're going to get that out to you and get Olivia or someone to send that over to
me? And here's the other thing. You know that there are young people who have been murdered in these private prisons, these youth centers.
Exactly.
They have dug up bodies of young kids who have been tortured and abused.
Wow.
So, Harry, we have to do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you get that piece from Olivia that David wrote, then you're gonna see that. Yeah, this makes sense. It's a waste of time. So we have Harriet. Well,
thank you,
from
guys.
The
I will. I hope to hear from you soon.
All right, Harriet.
Thank
take
you,
care.
Harriet.
Much love to you.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys. Have a good one
and
good luck.
Thank you, Harriet. Take care. Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Do we have Nicole on the line yet?
Yes,
Cliff?
We do have Nicole.
All right, let's bring Nicole in.
Okay.
Nicole Caceres. How you doing, Nicole?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Awesome, awesome. Nicole was with us on our Tuesday night show where we honored Anthony Graves, who was an exoneree out of Texas. He was the 12th death row inmate to be exonerated. Can't join us tonight, but Nicole, we appreciate you joining us. And, you know, you made the headlines in this one as far as, you know, being an attorney and a professor of communication at the University of St. Thomas. And you spent 8 years working on the Anthony Graves case. Share a little bit about, you know, some of the challenges associated with that. And then the bittersweet victory, I guess, as far as once Anthony was finally exonerated.
Well, sure. So, gosh, I think it was in the fall of 2001 that my students and I started investigating, looking into the facts of Anthony's case, and what we learned was basically that there was no real evidence against Anthony, that the state's evidence was flawed. And then doing more investigation, we found that there was actually evidence that he was innocent, that he wasn't anywhere near the crime scene at the time of the murders. And, of course, it was a hard row to hoe because it's very difficult to get a court to look at new evidence. Anthony, by that time, was really in the last round of his federal appeals. He had gone through the state habeas process already. He was into federal habeas appeals, and so it was really a challenge to try to get a court to listen at that late stage. Ultimately, however, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned his conviction because the prosecutor had engaged in, you know, some pretty egregious misconduct.
Wow.
The state was ordered to either retry Anthony or release him. And the state of Texas, of course, decided they would prefer to try to retry this man, even though there was, you know, less than zero evidence at this point. That took another 4.5 years until finally extraordinary prosecutor Kelly Siegler, who has her own show now investigating cold cases, who has put 19 men from Harris County on death row, she investigated as the prosecutor. Finally, somebody actually investigated the case, and she said that her investigation mirrored the one that I conducted. She dropped the charges against Anthony, but did so in a way that told the world that he was innocent. She held a press conference. She said she described the case as being a nightmare, criminal justice right. system nightmare, and that not only was there insufficient evidence against Anthony, there was no evidence against Anthony, and that he was an innocent man.
And you know, Nicole, that is an atrocity when a man has spent, you know, for some people, a lifetime,
yeah.
you know, 18 years. That's like those are valuable years in a person's life.
Of course.
I don't care what part of life you're in, whether you're a young teenager,
right.
whether you're a young adult, or whether you're entering into your senior years, for someone to take 18 years of your life. Now, Nicole, what were those egregious acts that the prosecutor was involved in? I mean, you know, one of the things that we talk about here on A Just Cause quite a bit is how it seems to be more about getting a win in the win column as opposed
yep.
to really, you know, exposing justice or executing justice. That's where, you know, the vision starts to get blurred a little bit, because it's all about a win in the win column.
Well, first of all, the evidence against Anthony was very, 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 very thin. There was really only one main piece of evidence, quote-unquote evidence against Anthony, and that was the testimony of a co-defendant. And this co-defendant did testify against Anthony and said that Anthony was his accomplice, but it turns out that really that co-defendant, before he took the witness stand, told the prosecutor, "This is wrong. Anthony didn't have anything to do with it." The prosecutor said, "Robert, if you don't go ahead and testify against Anthony, we're going to go after your wife."
Wow.
So Robert Carter was coerced to testify against Anthony. And then from that point forward, really, Robert Carter tried to do everything he could to take that back. I mean, he told just about anybody who would listen. He told his high school English teacher. He told Anthony's attorneys. He told everyone that he could that Anthony hadn't done it, and his last words before he was executed were, "Anthony Graves, I had nothing to do with this. I lied on him in court."
Wow.
But it wasn't until the prosecutor actually admitted that. He said, yeah, Robert told me that. like it was not a big deal. But, you know, there's a case, Brady versus Maryland, it requires that prosecutors – if they turn up exculpatory evidence of innocence, they have to provide that to defense counsel. And that was not provided to Anthony's counsel.
Yeah.
So this man had this information. What has taken place with him? What has happened to him? Has he been prosecuted, brought up on any kind of charges? What has happened to him?
Well, you know, prosecutors under our system have really blanket immunity for what they do in the course of their prosecutions.
That really sucks.
And so,
it sucks.
And you know, one thing that we thought of was bringing a grievance against him with the state bar, but and we did try that. The state bar did not pursue that grievance, and the statute of limitations for a bar grievance has passed, was already passed when we brought it. So that's not surprising that the state bar did nothing.
And you know, Nicole, something like that, there should not be a statute of limitations.
That's right.
When someone in a position of authority, a prosecutor, if you will, and it knowingly commits egregious acts in a case, and a man loses 18 years of his life, and then he gets off by having that blanket immunity, and then he gets off because of the fact that a statute of limitations has passed, You know, he did something wrong. He saved a man's life. You have a man that was facing death, you know, and as you know, we had a very emotional show on Tuesday. And,
right.
And when you think about that and how, and I guess you have to go back also, how many people have been wrongly put to death who did not get an opportunity to have a Nicole Caceres or didn't have the opportunity to have a Innocence Project or some DNA clearance, mm-hmm. you know, and so that when it's proven out that someone did this and did it deliberately, mm-hmm. withheld discovery, that in and of itself, I mean, that's something that we as a mm-hmm. we're going to have to, you know, fight for those kind
that's
of
right.
reforms.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
And go ahead, Nicole.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you're absolutely right about that.
And
yeah,
I have a question about, you know, with you being an attorney, and you see these type of things that happen. You see when judges go wrong and when prosecutors go wrong, and it's like the things that they and you took an oath of and said that you would uphold the law and that you would protect the innocent when it comes to, you know, them in court and these things. What does that do to you as an attorney? And obviously you're one of the good ones. And so what does that do to you? How does that make you feel as far as, you know, this is my career, this is what I put my life into. And then you see the people who you thought took that same type of oath and you watch them trample it in the street. What does that do to you?
Well, I guess, you know, it's like anything else. It's like any other human endeavor, and there are going to be good ones and bad ones, right? And we're going to make – people are going to make mistakes. It's like this the argument you were just making a minute ago for the death – or against the death penalty. We're not always going to be right. Not every lawyer is going to take that oath seriously. Not every judge is going to work to uphold the rights of the accused. That's unfortunate. I don't think that means that the whole profession is bad, but
right.
there are going to be those bad apples, like there are doctors who are crooked,
you know,
and there are plumbers who are crooked. But the legal system is so important. The criminal justice system deals
yeah.
with people's lives, and so when there are those bad apples in this system, it
mm-hmm.
makes it especially egregious. There needs
yeah.
to be real checks. So that
yeah.
when somebody gets prosecuted by a prosecutor who isn't upholding the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
that courts will take a second look, and not so many of the appeals that these prisoners get, really they're not substantive appeals. They're just going through the motions, and the courts are really just rubber stamping what an earlier court found. Occasionally,
yeah.
you know, it would serve justice if a court would really take a closer look.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what?
There are bad apples occasionally, you know?
Right,
exactly,
absolutely.
Exactly. And I was going to say, too, Nicole, that yourself and other lawyers, organizations just like you are the ones that a Just Cause is looking to align with and to work with, you know, in working these cases for ourselves, you know, getting out there and reaching out to people, because we need people such as yourself. You know, that are going to look out there and listen to this person that's crying out year after year and day after day saying that I'm innocent. Somebody please take a look.
And you are to be applauded, Nicole,
absolutely.
For what you did in this. I mean, you and your students and just sticking it out. And, you know, Nicole, last week, and I'm going to bring this up because I know you're not going to talk about yourself on this. I've kind of learned a little bit about your character as we've talked to Anthony and yourself over the last couple of days. And Anthony set up a scholarship fund in your name at the University of Texas, and the University of Texas Law School. And,
that's right.
And so he surprised you with that honor a few days ago. And so what does that mean as far as – I know he said that he knew that you would not take money, and so he wanted to do something that would ensure that what you did and your team would live on forever. What does that mean to you?
You know, it means the world to me. And I was absolutely stunned and surprised and shocked. But Anthony knows me too well. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I can't refuse. I mean, that's just a wonderful, wonderful way to you know, try to help improve the system, and to put it in my name just means the world to me. Anthony received, I won't call it compensation, I call it payment, because he's never going to be compensated for what he lost. He got a, some payment from the state, and, you know, he could take that and spend it on himself, and he'd be perfectly at his, that those are his right, it would be his right to do that. But he wanted to take part of that and set up the scholarship and give back, which just shows what a great person he is. You
know? Nicole Casares, thanks for joining us on A Just Cause Coast to Coast tonight. And, again, thanks for spending time with us on Tuesday evening as well. We really appreciate what you did in the Anthony Graves case. Folks, find out a little bit more about Anthony Graves. Go to anthonybelieves.com. Again, that's anthonybelieves.com. Nicole, have a great evening. Tell Anthony hello for us. We'll be right back. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back.
When I was diagnosed with breast cancer, both of my daughters were pregnant, and everything I was looking forward to turned into everything I was going to miss. First words, first steps, being there for my grandchildren, for my daughters. Today, those babies are three. I'm with them all the time. I don't know what's next, but I know I'm here today. My name is Alanthea Pena, and I'm Susan G. Komen.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
Do something good for your community.
Reuse bags and bottles and always recycle.
Help us collect 1 million pounds of food.
Help people prepare for natural disasters.
Do something about homelessness.
Anyone could be a rock star in their community.
So then do
something. Do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Visit dosomething.org to find out how.
Beat it. Just
beat it, John.
Just get in and talk about it.
I've got to go home.
Oh, come on, Carrie.
We're going to a new place.
Don't be afraid.
She wants to go home, right? Go.
Whoa. You okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You sure?
Relax.
What's a few beers?
If you don't stop your friend from drinking and driving, you're as good as dead. Drinking and driving can kill a friendship.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness
are all courtesy of the heroic men and women of the United States military.
They give so much, and they ask so little.
I'm Joe Bontaine.
I'm Jack Scalia.
I'm Nick Searcy.
I'm Bonnie Jo Laughlin.
I'm Scott Elrod. Please help me thank our heroes by doing something.
Donate your time, talent, or gifts
to groups and organizations devoted to our troops and their families.
Visit a veteran's hospital.
A smile. A hug.
A shoulder. A handshake.
Or even an attentive ear goes a long, long way.
Quite simply, give.
They'll sincerely appreciate it.
And it just might do wonders for you, too.
Remember, freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free. Get involved.
Give back now.
God bless America.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host. I'm being Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. We got a good show going tonight. We're digging into the IRP 6 case. We've been talking about that missing transcript, the writ of mandamus, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. We're going to be joined by Abraham Bonowitz for about 10 minutes or so. Abraham is the director of the National Coalition to Abolish Death Penalty, and so we're going to talk to him a little bit. Okay, as far as AJC Radio News, let's talk a little bit about what's in the news. So there's a current event, a current happening. You know, Texas is in the news all over the place. All over the place. And this just came out today, Cliff. I know you sent this over to me, but I was like, what? And the parallels, though. I mean, when you read some of the stuff in here, and then you look at the IRP 6 case, and it's like, wow, this is just crazy. What's the story about, Cliff?
Well, we have this judge down in Texas in the 258th District. Her name is Judge Elizabeth Coker. And today she announced that she's resigning as the judge of the 258th Judicial District Court, effective on December 6, 2013. What really gets you about this, here's this judge. She's sitting in court. Now, consider this. You're sitting in court. Your life's on the line. You're being accused of all these acts. And this case was a child abuse case.
Right.
And they're saying you did this and you did that to this kid, and you're guilty and you're fighting, and your defense attorney is there fighting for you. And you come to find out the judge is on the bench. This isn't like some other time. This is during the trial. The judge is on the bench,
right,
sending
right.
text messages.
Right.
During trial.
During
saying,
trial.
Hey, do this. Ask this question. Do that. Push this out there. Texting during a trial.
During the trial.
To the prosecutor telling him how to basically ensure. Now, it's one thing if, because at this point, it's not to make the prosecutor ensure that he gets a conviction, because the judge is on his side now. She's going to ensure this same judge was found to, and what they call this type of communication ex parte is meaning
right.
it's communication without one party involved. And that,
right.
is, that obviously that's against the law for a judge to do that, just so everybody understands.
Exactly.
The judge cannot communicate with one party in a proceeding without the other party present. Nor can this judge communicate with, you know, jurors and people like that, witnesses, anybody who has anything to do with it. This judge was found out that she had ex parte communications with other prosecutors in other cases.
I believe there was some inappropriate activities with the jury.
Yes. In deliberations. Now this, oh my God, this is sick. During deliberations and one of the trials, she goes into the juror room with the jurors while they're trying to come to their
conclusion. Counsel.
No counsel. Nobody else there, the judge and the jurors. Now, you know that what she said was inappropriate to them. You
exactly.
know that she told
okay,
them bring
guys,
that conviction
okay,
in.
Go ahead,
okay,
Apple. I know where you're going.
You know,
I know where you're going.
No. You don't have this one yet.
Okay.
Right here. This sounds like something Forrest Gump said. Stupid is as stupid does.
Okay.
Oh, it's ridiculous. You're like,
okay.
And then, I mean, this judge felt so empowered and so much that, you know, nobody can do anything to me. I'm not just going to communicate outside of the courthouse, you know, going to dinner with the prosecutor. Being a partner at the same firm as the prosecutor.
Right, right.
She's texting during the case.
Well, I want to go back to this thing about the jury, though. I mean, because in the IRP 6 case, you know, just as we suspect that there was something went wrong as far as inappropriate communication, there has to be something. Something had to have gone wrong with this jury. There was, now granted, the whole way that the IRP 6 case was orchestrated, it was orchestrated to be sure that the jury did not hear all of the evidence. But the evidence that they did hear, and when the prosecution witnesses were put on the stand and they were impeached by IRP 6 one after the other and caught in lie after lie after lie. And so there was enough there for the jury to know that. Right. Even when the jury came back after, what, a day or maybe a day and a half of deliberation, and they said, is there any more evidence?
Right.
Well, something was said to that jury.
Exactly.
It had
Absolutely.
To have been.
Exactly.
You know it was. And you know, so many times we hear people say, well, that's against the law. They can't do that. A judge can't withhold transcripts. It's against the law. A judge can't talk to a jury, you know, tamper with the jury. That's against the law. A judge can't, you know, be on the side of the prosecutor. That's against the law. A judge can't refuse an expert witness or exculpatory evidence to be brought in. When you look at this Judge Coker down in Texas, Elizabeth Coker, it's like everything she did here was against the law. Everything every time she had communications with the prosecutor outside the appearance of someone from the defense, every time she went into a jury deliberation room while they're coming to a conclusion about what happened during the case and about to bring their verdict back, every time she did these things, it was against the law. And and what's even worse, even when the commission was bringing her up on these charges and investigation, she talked to the witness, one of the commission's witnesses, and tried to convince them not to be a witness against her. So she knew, well, nothing's really going to happen to me, and if I just, you know, continue down my path, maybe, hey, maybe they won't kick me off the bench. And it's ridiculous because it shows the power that the judges have without being able to be prosecuted, without having any type of repercussions, that they can go about doing these type of things and nobody holds them accountable.
And I have to go back again to the IRP 6 case.
Yeah. Yeah.
They use fear.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Let's go through this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the jury does not get all of the evidence that they need.
Right.
We believe that somebody said something to them outside of the presence of the IRP 6. They were representing themselves.
Exactly.
So they were counsel. Mm-hmm. They didn't go to the jury room when the judge went in there.
That's mm-hmm. right.
And so, you know, the jury returns a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
The judge says in open court, okay, thank you for your service. Mm-hmm. You know, the normal spiel. Thank you mm-hmm. for your service. You're free to talk to anyone at any time about this case. Oh, by the way, jury, if you don't mind, if you have, and I'm paraphrasing here,
mm-hmm.
hang out in the jury room. I'd like to personally thank you for your service. You just did, Judge Arguello.
Exactly.
You just thanked me. You just thanked the jury. What else do you have to say to that jury behind closed doors?
Right.
Well, after the fact, okay, you have a lot of cases out here, right?
Mm-hmm.
After cases, you have situations where juries talk to people.
Of course.
They talk to the media. They talk about everything. Well, a Just Cause went to, you know, to do like a post-trial analysis
mm-hmm.
to went south in this case.
Right.
These jurors in this case were scared to death.
Absolutely.
They actually said, you know, I was told I can't talk to you. It's like, what?
That's right.
Nobody else heard that.
No.
What we heard in the courtroom was, you're free to talk to anybody. So
right.
What did Judge Arguello say to them? What did that bailiff say to them when they went into that courtroom or into that jury room? One juror was contacted by a post trial analyst,
right? Mm-hmm.
And that juror said basically they had to call the FBI.
Yeah.
And the FBI told them, if anybody from the defense side contacts you, you call us.
The FBI.
And
I believe
that the U.S. attorney, assistant U.S. attorney Matthew Kirsch, put something out like that as well. Did he not?
Oh my goodness!
Right. I mean, he was contacted by them that basically, if somebody from the defense contacts you, then you call my office
and we'll
handle
it. We'll take care of it.
And so
it's like, what does that mean?
Exactly. It's like, go and you're going to waterboard somebody?
Well, one of the jurors actually made a comment to an investigator. He said that, you know, am I going to go to jail if I talk to you?
Mm.
What did they say, Cliff? What did they say, Ethel?
No,
I mean, man, if we could be a fly on the wall in that jury room.
You know what? I wonder if is that the same one that told the investigator that the judge and the bailiff told them not to talk to anybody?
Right.
I don't know. We're going to have to do a whole show about that as far
right.
as, you know, the jury rights. You know, there's an organization, the Fully Informed Jury Association,
mm-hmm.
and they have a lot of information out there on their website. That website is www.fija.org, www.fija.org. Man, they spell it out for you. And one of the things that judges and prosecutors use to put fear
mm-hmm.
into
mm-hmm.
jurors
right, right.
is that they you know, they don't know what their
that's
rights are.
Right, that's
and
right.
jurors need to know what their rights are.
Exactly.
And so when we return, we're going to go to the phones. You're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
Police Department.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
A dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie.
I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Do I look suspicious?
Do I look suspicious?
Am I suspicious?
This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining and he's just walking around looking about.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
You have to recognize that this whole stylizing yourself as a gangster, you're going to be a gangster wannabe. Well, people are going to perceive you as a menace.
I am here to continue to research the fight camp.
I am Trayvon Martin.
It's time to wake up. This could happen to you.
Sergeant Michelle Garcia served meritoriously in Iraq and has the medals to prove it. Soon after leaving the Navy, Lieutenant Chris Scott found a job, a home, and started a family of his own. Corpsman Richard Stokely took the skills he learned in Vietnam and put them to good use as a paramedic. But soon after leaving the military, each of these veterans fell on hard times and faced homelessness. Even after Michelle lost all her savings, even after Chris wasn't able to pay his mortgage, and even after Richard battled alcoholism for years, they each reached out for help when they needed it most. A simple phone call puts them in touch with a trained professional from the Department of Veterans Affairs. That call got Michelle a place to stay until she could afford one of her own, put Chris in touch with employment assistance, and found Richard a substance abuse program. These veterans are success stories not only for how they were able to help others while serving their country, but for how they were able to let others help them. If you know of or are a veteran in need,
or are a veteran in need, make the call.
Welcome back to the program. This is A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman with
Cliff Stewart.
Thank you. And Ethel Lopez, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I have to do that at least once.
Oh, God.
I'm wrong with that.
Oh, man. Hey, on the phones, we have Abraham Bonowitz, the director of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. Abraham was on with us on Tuesday evening, so we wanted to invite him back. Abraham, we've got about 10 minutes or so where we can talk a little bit more with you about that and what your organization is doing. How you doing tonight, Abraham?
I'm doing just fine. Let me correct. I'm no longer with the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty.
Ah.
I'm not working independently with groups around the country, but that's still a fine organization, and people should check them out at NCADP.org, but I'm no longer speaking to them. So glad to be with you.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thanks for that clarification. So, Abraham, so what are you up to as far as going around the country to abolish the death penalty? I know we had you on Tuesday night as a result of the piece that we did on Anthony Graves, you know, a man that spent a better part of 18 years on death row in Texas. And so fortunately for Anthony and for us, because Anthony is a great man, that he was exonerated. So what are some of the things that you're doing around the country?
I'm glad I was able to be out on Tuesday, and I was on just at the end of the show after getting finished with the celebration we were having in Maryland, which is where I live now, because we just finished abolishing the death penalty here in Maryland. We passed the bill in the spring. The governor signed it on May 2nd, and it took effect on October 1st, so we were at a celebration. And one of the key people speaking there was another exonerated, a man named Kirk Bloodsworth, who was the first person exonerated from death row in the country using DNA technology. Now, this is a former Marine, a guy who'd never been in trouble with the law before, and he was wrongly convicted in the murder of a little girl. And as he said, just like what Anthony was saying the other night, if it could happen to me, it can happen to anybody. And the bottom line is we have a system that's broken. I used to support the death penalty, and in trying to prove the anti-death penalty people wrong, I found out that everything I believed about the death penalty, the truth was the opposite. And in fact, what we have is a system that's broken, doesn't work, doesn't serve the needs of victims, and risks the execution of the innocent.
That you see, just look at the number of the people that you see that get exonerated, and after spending 20, 25, 30 years in prison. And, you know, a lot of these people were death row exonerees. And you know, they celebrate the release, but no one ever dives into where are the flaws in the system. Why is this system so, so flawed? And as you stated, it's broken. And, you know, it's great to celebrate the release of gentlemen. And we need to take it a few steps back from there even to say, okay, why did this happen? You know, we had Nicole Caceres on a few minutes ago, and she said, just like in any other industry, you have some bad apples in there. Mm-hmm. But we need to start holding prosecutors and judges accountable when they do deliberate, egregious acts mm-hmm. to ensure the prosecution and incarceration of innocent people.
I would take a step back and just say, you know, we do examine these issues, and when people want to pay attention and listen, you know, there's a careful examination of each of these cases. And I used to be the director of Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, and a number of cases in Florida. In fact, Florida leads the nation in death row exonerations with at least 24. One of those guys is a man named Juan Melendez, who they knew before they even took him to trial, they knew he was the wrong guy, and yet they still took him to trial, they still convicted him, they still sentenced him to go through almost 18 years. Now, in my book, that's attempted murder.
It is.
And that's not the only case. This is a prosecutor, his name is Hardy Pickard, and Hardy Pickard knew before he took Juan Melendez to trial that he was innocent, and yet he's not held accountable. And in fact, across the country, prosecutors have immunity from being held accountable, even when they knowingly send the wrong person to prison. And that's just wrong, and we have to change that law. Some people within our movement advocate for that. There's an organization called Witness to Innocence, witnesstoinnocence.org, is made up of death row exonerees, and it's one of the things that they advocate for, a couple of things, one of which is holding prosecutors accountable, but the other is getting good, you know, reasonable compensation for the people who are wrongly convicted so they can actually try to have some semblance of a life after their life has been ruined by years of incarceration.
Yeah, Witness to Innocence, they're doing a great job. And you know, we also have a link on the Just Cause website where we have a petition going on change.org to try and bring about laws that would hold. They bury these laws in the middle of all kinds of other bills, and then they don't execute the laws. It just kind of sits there dormant and as if no one knows it's there. And so, you know, those are the kind of things, like you said, Abraham, we need to, as a grassroots effort, the different organizations that are out here bind together and ensure that these types of things don't continue to occur. So,
sure.
Abraham, I think it's important.
If I may, I think it's important. You asked me what work I'm doing around the country, and for more than 20 years now, I've been working on this issue. For a long time as a volunteer, and the last few years I've been paid by various organizations. But the for me, what moved me was learning that in order to get the death penalty or even face the death penalty, you have to kill in a county that can afford a death penalty trial. You have to kill in a county where the prosecutors will want to seek a death penalty. And what that boils down to is fewer than 2% of all the counties in the country are the ones responsible for sending people to death row and execution. And wow. For me, if what matters more is money and race and politics and especially the geography, the county of where you kill, that matters more than how bad the crime is, then we've got a problem, especially because, for me, what bothers me the most about this is the words carved in to the face of the United States Supreme Court building are equal justice under law. And
that's right.
The last thing. It's the last thing that we have is a system that's equal. And until we can make it fair and equal, then we absolutely should not have something like the death penalty. I don't think we should have the death penalty at all anyway. I like to say that the facts changed my head, but the journey changed my heart. And by that, I mean the journey that I've been on working with everywhere from murder victim family members who oppose death penalty to the families of people on death row who themselves are then put on death row in a way to people who have been wrongly convicted and exonerated to even a new group of people. It's not really new, but it's new to actually being present in our movement, which is prison workers, former heads of the Department of Correction, former wardens, former corrections officers, all of whom have conducted executions themselves or overseen them, who now speak out and say, we should not have the death penalty because it's a system that is fraught with error, and especially for them because of what it does to our prison workers when we ask them to kill in our name.
And it's cruel and unusual. I mean, it's right there in our laws as far as cruel and unusual punishment, especially when it's so flawed that there are no guarantees that the person that you're putting to death is the right person. I mean, it has been proven over and over again that they have executed the wrong people. Obviously, they have the wrong people incarcerated.
But I think it's fair to say that
we
have executed the wrong person, and there are innocent people on death row and innocent people in prison in general. But I would also caution you and say that for the vast majority of people who have been executed and are on death row are there for crimes they did commit. We can argue,
the fact that anyone was executed wrongly is enough error there for me to say that should be put on pause.
I couldn't agree with you more. But I want to be clear, though. We can't hang our hat just on innocence, because the fact is most of the people who are on death row are guilty of the crimes for which they were convicted, which, again, the biggest problem you have is this disparity in the application of the system. So we've repealed the death penalty now legislatively. In New Jersey in 2007, I was the field manager in that campaign, and then I went on to work with the National Coalition and help a number of other state organizations, including New Mexico in 2009, Illinois in 2011, Connecticut in 2012, and we just got done with Maryland in 2013, and we're working on, just today, New Hampshire launched its campaign. They're going to run a bill in 2014. Delaware has a bill in progress. Colorado and Kansas may be running their legislation this year. So we've got a lot of this happening across the country. But all of it, you have to, it's all about helping people see how the system is broken. And for different people, there is a different reason that the system is broken. For some people, it's about the wasting the money. For some people, it's about the possibility of a wrongful execution. For some people, it's contrary to the Bible. And whatever Bible we're following, what it teaches about, even if you want to thump on the Bible and say it calls for the death penalty, the death penalty that we have in our country is not the death penalty in the Bible, which demands fairness and demands surety that we have the wrong person. So whatever your piece of it is, there's a reason that the system's broken.
Awesome. On the phones tonight, we have Abraham Bonowitz. Abraham, thanks for joining us, and we really appreciate the work that you're doing out there to help to abolish the death penalty. Tell folks how they can reach you, and then we got to bump to another segment here.
Sure. But anybody that would like more information or to get involved, you can reach me directly at 800-973-6548, and I'll say that again in a second, 800-973-6548. But most importantly, just Google the name of your state and the words death penalty, and one of the things that will come up will be the state coalition, the state organization in your state where you live, and the most important thing that anybody can do is to get on the mailing list, get on the list for the state organization where you live, whether it's Colorado's Alternatives to the Death Penalty or the Kansas Coalition, whatever it is, and make sure you're on their list, and then also write to your state legislators, and not just an email. Get out a piece of paper, write it with your hand, put it in the mail with a stamp, and tell them it's time to get rid of the death penalty. And do that again each time the state coalition says it's time to contact their legislators. We got to do that. We got to talk to people, educate people, get more people signed up into this work, because when we all speak up, that's how we're going to change the law.
All right, Abraham, thanks for joining us on the call tonight. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. On the phones, we have Scott Osborne. Scott, you there?
I sure am. And boy,
with us?
When you start talking about Texas,
hey,
I got
Scott, how you doing tonight?
I am doing great, and you guys are really rocking. You know, I told Livia, you guys just take it and run with it. And you guys are going for the 500K. You're doing great. Let me tell you, this is the best show we've got on Contending for Truth Radio right now.
My goodness. You go ahead, then.
That's your sister from another mother.
Evo, when you said stupid is as stupid does, I don't know if you could hear me or not, but I was a hooping and a hollering out here in California. You know, there's another phrase that I think goes along with it. It's too big for their britches. That's an old one. Before stupid is, stupid does. And you know, it touches me. It touches me because we're going to Texas, and because, you know, there's this stuff goes on. But it really touches me because these guys, basic biblical principles, these guys are supposed to be servants. They are supposed to be servants. They are not supposed to be the big bad boss who makes all the decisions.
Right.
And we've
That's
got that problem with Freon Miller. We've got that problem with the IRP 6. We've obviously got this problem with this judge that doesn't know when to put the phone up down in Texas. And
That's right.
Why this show is so important. It's so important. It's why the work that you guys do is so important. I also, I'll pass it back to you, but I also want to throw in here on what Abraham just said. Great guest. Awesome. You know, 10 years ago, I was a very staunch proponent of the death penalty. And over the last few years, I have changed my mind on that. Part of the reason I started changing my mind a long time ago, because California, when you wait 20 years to execute somebody, when you wait 30 years to execute somebody, it dilutes the purpose. And the purpose is to lower crime. The purpose isn't to get rid of somebody. The purpose is to make other people go, okay, I better not do that, or I might end up being on death row. And it doesn't work when you take 30 years, 20 years in order to accomplish the task. But I am seeing more and more more. Where we've got judges like this stupid texting judge down in Texas, the people
man.
That are
wasn't that something?
What's that? And Freedon Miller and all these, and
ahead,
I
Scott.
See such a bad situation in our justice system right now. We need to fix that. We need to fix it hard before we go killing anybody else. Because I don't trust mistakes aren't going to be made. What I don't trust is that people aren't going to maliciously make mistakes on purpose. And I believe that this down in Texas is the kind of person who would be willing to make a mistake on purpose because she's too big for riches. And I pass it back to you. You guys have done a great job.
How is Don doing, Scott?
You know, Don's doing great. He keeps himself up. He gets a lot of visitors. Steve Williams goes by and sees him a lot. His mom and dad are doing pretty good. There are some things that are coming up here soon with Wisconsin's Innocence Project, and they're getting ready to start a new round of legal work. And I firmly believe that this is we're at the end. I really do. Once Wisconsin Innocence Project, and this is the only case in the history of the Wisconsin Innocence Project that doesn't include DNA, because of course the rape kit was destroyed. But it's the first case that they've ever taken, and they've ran with it. They're getting ready. We've been waiting. We've been waiting for a few weeks now. We're expecting at any moment for them to do their paperwork, and it's going to be a whole nother program once they do.
Awesome.
Wow,
awesome.
Wow.
Hey, Scott, great. You know that you made the show possible for us on this Thursday evening
right
here on Contending for Truth Radio Network every Thursday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And so, Scott, what's your show and what?
Well, here in a few minutes, what time is it? In about 25 minutes, on the Underground Hard Drive Radio Network, where we'll do the Free Don Miller Show that we've been doing for 3 years. Oh. It used to sit in this time spot, but I'm so glad Stephen Williams took it back over. It was a responsibility that was wearing me out. But we'll do it for about an hour tonight, talk about the Free Don Miller case. It's an insane case. It blows everything out of the water that you would ever think about the justice system. It's conspiracy. It's lying. It's cheating. Let me tell you, you've got a sheriff who stole $40,000 from the people of Hurley, Wisconsin. And then when he got caught, he said he didn't know it was illegal. That's the kind of insanity in this case.
Wow.
And
I didn't know stealing was illegal.
Wow. Okay, Scott. Well, we'll let you go on and rest up your voice. Hey, and by the way, I'm glad you got your voice back. You were kind of hurting there a couple of weeks ago.
It's good talking to you, Scott.
Hey, much love to you, brother. Okay, thanks, Scott. Okay, Cliff, we got anybody else on the phone?
Arrington on. You there, Jay?
What's going on, Cliff? Hello?
Hey, Jay, it's good to hear from you again. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Jay.
Hi, Jay. How you doing?
Hi, Ethel. Hi, Sam. How are you guys?
So what's on your mind tonight, Jay?
No, I was just listening.
Okay.
I was just listening, but I will just say I'm intrigued by, everything everybody's been saying, and, I was especially intrigued by what Harriet said about the blanket immunity that prosecutors and judges enjoy, and how the members of Congress are saying it's unconstitutional for them to be involved in a case. And I was just saying to myself, that doesn't even pass the smell test, because, we had a member of Congress, I believe it was Emanuel Cleaver, who's a chairman of the Black Congressional Caucus. He wore a hoodie in the well of Congress to protest Trayvon Martin. The murder of Trayvon Martin. Then you had the Senate back in when the Terry Schiavo case, they got involved neck deep in something that they had nothing to do with, and no one screamed that was unconstitutional. And I just feel as though
it's unconstitutional for them to get involved if they don't want to.
Right, that's exactly my point. That's why it doesn't pass the smell test. But there again, I was just thinking and listening to all of this. We're living in a form of quasi-slavery here, because when you are able to subject me to laws that you're not subjected to, I'm a slave. That's what I am.
That's
I'm
exactly
a slave.
Right.
I am a slave. And it just fries my can to think that we're in a country, and I'm going to tell you this. I wrote a song for you guys, and I sent it to Olivia today. And in one of the lines, and it says, just talks about how I live in a country that says this is the land of the free. You know, this is the home of the brave. And I didn't say this part, but, you know, I'm thinking about that. I'm in a country that touts its fight for freedom and its equality and its fair and balanced constitution, and I'm still a slave. I mean, I am a slave.
That's right.
If you come to my door, you can take me captive, and there's nothing I can do about it. And if you choose to, you can make up evidence against me. You can make it look like I did something when I did not do it. And then I have no recourse, because you can say, you can plant poison ivy and tell everybody it's a rose. And if nobody looks that way, they'll just believe it's a rose, you know. But we have to.
That's right.
To believe that somebody is going to notice that what these people have done is not a rose. They planted poison ivy. And we just need somebody, on the inside who's got some guts and who's not afraid to lose their collard greens and their cornbread every night. You know, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we're with you. We're with you, Jay.
You know,
Jay is with the... Jay is a staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner, and he's doing a multi-part series on the IRP-6. So, Jay, this week you came out with part 5, and it's titled Reasonable Questions. Share a little bit about what that story is about, and then if you can tell us what...
Yeah, that was...
Six story, and then we got to go to a break. We're going to come back up.
Okay. Well, that was just... I just put in order some of the things that had transpired in the case, you know, like the letter from Susan Holland, the letter from Gary Goldberg, the timing of it, asking the question, why did she change her mind after she gave Demetrius Harper such a glowing email a couple of months before, congratulating him basically and hoping that she'd see him on the cover as a self-made millionaire. Why was the affidavit of... Gary Hilberry ignored when he vouched for the viability of their product? Why did why the findings of the FBI were ignored and the prosecution, the U.S. attorney went ahead and prosecuted the case? How he got the second grand jury to indict them versus the first one who said it was a civil matter? Just questions that need to be answered. And in my follow-up to this last article, I've already started it, actually. I'm going to ask a couple of more questions, and then I'm going to start answering them, because there are a lot of things out there, and no one has heard that I have discovered yet, but there are a lot of things out there that I have discovered that I haven't even written yet. But one of the thing that I'm going to start off with in the next article, where I'm going to start answering these questions, I'm going to talk about the rules that govern a federal employee from contacting his former employee within a certain amount of time to influence their decision about something in the public. So we're going
to
talk
about
that. We're going to talk about United States Code 18205, and talk about why perhaps Mr. Goldberg delivered that letter to Matthew Kirsch instead of mailing it, and how he got that information about the IRP. So we're going to start answering some questions. We asked a lot of questions. Now we're going to start getting some reasonable answers, you know. So that's where we're going to go from there.
Hey.
Yeah,
okay, Jay, as always, we appreciate your support and supporting the IRP-6 and A Just Cause. That's Jay Arrington, staff writer for the Maryland Daily Examiner. And he's doing a multi-part series on the IRP-6. And you can follow him on the Maryland Daily. Check out his articles on www.a-justcause.com. Again, www.a-justcause.com. Jay, as always, thanks for joining us on the show tonight. Okay. So, Cliff, do we have anybody else on that we need to bring on the line right now?
Nope, not at this time. We
had a call, international caller, but, you know, holding internationally.
Yeah,
is,
that can get kind of expensive.
Ordeal.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, hopefully that person will call back in and we can get them on the line here. So the clock, as usual, is working against us. Outside of this show, it just kind of starts to run away.
Yeah,
so let's do a recap. We talked tonight about the 200 pages of omitted transcript. And so that's some of the things that Jay has also talked about in his articles.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about how attorney Gwendolyn Solomon filed a writ of mandamus to have those documents produced. And the courts in Denver, in the 10th District, they denied that motion.
Right.
And so, you know, what does that mean, Cliff, as far as that denial? And what are the next steps?
Well, when the bill... There are these missing transcripts. We have men who have been sitting in prison for 14 months that should never have been there.
That's right.
And but then they make this little – I am so tired of their canned phrases and canned response. This is already being taken up. This has already been addressed, isn't that? No, it has not been addressed.
That's right.
First off, the transcripts have not been presented.
That's right.
And you can say, well – It's part of the appeal process, which I'm still fighting to understand because this is supposed to be public record.
Well, and it is part of the appellate. 200 pages that have been omitted. The appellate panel cannot do due diligence as far as their review of this case without those 200 pages.
That's exactly, right. Especially when one of the issues up on appeal is the Fifth Amendment violation and how the judge forced one of the defendants to get on the stand with the threat of closing their case. And that is contained in this 200 pages of missing transcript. That is an issue on appeal. The appellate process cannot move forward without that entire transcript that says here's where it
until this hits the mainstream media.
Yeah.
I mean,
mainstream,
they've been sitting kind of dormant,
yeah.
But, you know, we've been putting out press releases over the last couple of weeks
just
on this subject alone.
Exactly.
The one where we put out 3 weeks ago now, it has went over 150,000 impressions.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that basically announced the fact that we discovered that there are 200 pages that have been omitted. Last week, we put out a press release talking about the writ of mandamus that Attorney Solomon has filed.
Right.
That one is over almost 120,000 impressions now.
Exactly.
We put one out today talking about the that one is over 20,000 or right around 20,000. I haven't checked it before until a little bit before the show. But that one is just going through the roof as well. Actually, it is over 20,000.
Right.
And so, you know, there are a lot of people that are taking note. When this thing, you know, hits the wire from the standpoint, and these guys are exonerated, and we know that there is enough evidence for them to be exonerated, you cannot continually talk about 200 pages that have been omitted from a transcript that are vital to an appeal, and no one takes note.
And you know what, and this is the thing I look at as well. You keep hearing people talking about in the world.
We got the world fooled. We got the world fooled.
You know, I'm telling you, because how can you possibly say that when you've got six men in prison and you've got 200 pages plus of transcripts that's missing, but they have to have somebody, their lawyer, filing a suit on their behalf to get the 200 pages in order to get a fair appeals hearing.
You got to get a lawsuit.
Yeah.
In the system,
you hear me?
To force someone for you to have a right that you're supposed to. I'm going to say is that this is a right that I am supposed to already have. Why do I have to sue somebody to say, give me my right that I'm supposed to already have?
But we have the best government in the
we
world.
We got them fooled at the
whole time.
It's like...
Take off the blinders.
I'm supposed to have
no,
the
that's
right.
What happened. Lady Justice, they took the blinders
no,
off of her. And she is peeking and is like, I think I'm going to...
She better keep her zone.
Oh, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, justice is supposed to be blind.
Exactly.
It's supposed to be weighed in the balances based on evidence.
Exactly.
Based on, you know, the Constitution.
Exactly.
In the Bill of Rights. All the laws that are on the books. But when you get man involved in
right,
it,
right.
and they start, you know, adjusting the scales and calibrating
that's
it one way
problem.
Or another, that's the problem.
I'm telling
right.
you.
And the only way that they can take those scales and say, okay, I'm gonna adjust them toward me and my agenda is the fact that they know nobody can do anything to them. If they say, I can be a judge and be a corrupt judge like this Judge Elizabeth Coker
in Texas, yeah.
and say, well, I can text during trial. I can go talk to the jury. I can have these ex parte communications and basically tell them, hey, don't be a witness against me. Don't cooperate with them. Change your story. All because she knows that there's not going to be any prosecution. If anything, you know, hey, she gets put off the bench like she did. But when you look at this and the person that she was texting to,
mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm.
now that person is now a judge. So you already have mm-hmm, this person mm-hmm. has already shown that during a trial, they will take mm-hmm. this communication that's mm-hmm. not supposed to be going on and pass it on and help themselves win the case. And now you make that person a judge? What kind of sickness is that?
Cliff, can you believe? Writ of mandamus. When they're saying that this is a frivolous mandamus petition and that they're seeking relief on something that they should have already done, something that they could have done in their appeal. I go back to the fact of what I just said, Ethel.
Mm-hmm.
This is something, why do I even have to do this when it's my right anyway?
Exactly.
It's just like, a God-given right to breathe.
That's and right, it. And then they're saying, well, they should have already addressed. Well, it was addressed to the judge in open court, and the court transcript shows that the judge said, no, you can't have the transcript. Transcript, when I asked for it, yeah, it. I'm requesting it. I need it. Now I'm putting in the writ of mandamus, and you tell me, well, you should have dealt with this earlier.
And, you know, I pulled up, and it's in the press release, in Nola's plain English law dictionary. It defines a writ of mandamus, and you can find all kinds of different definitions about a writ of mandamus. It says it's an order from a court to an inferior government official ordering the government official to properly fulfill their official duties or correct an abuse of discretion. Discretion in what Judge Arguello did.
Okay.
There was definitely abuse.
That's exactly
whether there
right.
was discretion or not. I don't think so.
That's
I think it was deliberate abuse.
You know what? They need to go on and take that rag off of Lady Justice's eyes and just give her a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses because, honey, she see everything as it is.
Oh. And you know what, Cliff?
ain't nothing hid from her. Ain't a thing hid.
Oh, yeah. Ethel comes up with some
I'm sorry. It ain't hid.
No, I'm telling you,
it's
lady.
It's right there. She see everything.
Yep. She has become you a prostitute.
But you know the thing? Six brothers. You got Gary, David, Demetrius, Kendrick, Clint, Dave. All of them are sitting right now,
in prison.
They should have been released on bond pending appeal.
Exactly.
And this is the type of thing that would validate that even.
Exactly.
And for the court to say this is a frivolous mandamus.
It's totally ridiculous.
Hey, let's go to the phone.
Yeah, we have our international caller, Darcy Della Prosa. Are you with us?
Hi.
Darcy,
this is Ethel. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. It's great what you guys are doing at getting it out there about the IRP sex. Can you hear me?
Well, Darcy, we can. And, you know, Darcy, the work that you have been doing on behalf of the IRP six, man, I tell you, you are going over and above. Do you ever sleep?
I know.
I mean, what
time is it in New England?
You are
in the
always
UK.
Doing... You're always doing something for the guys, and it's like, man, this is just incredible.
I just hope to get it out there. It should go out more international. People should be more aware of these cases. But there's so much injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And Darcy, from everything that you're doing, you have so much going on, girl. We're elated that you even have the time, you know, to do all that you're doing for the IRP 6.
I think we lost Darcy.
Oh, no,
she is calling from the UK. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Darcy, you know that we love you, and you know, and the guys, the IRP6, they really appreciate everything you're doing. And not sure if Darcy's going to be able to come in tonight.
Oh, yes.
And to acknowledge her.
Yes,
and
yes.
All of the work that she's been doing on behalf of the IRP6, it's just incredible. I mean,
it really is.
Ethel, what's some of the, a couple of other things that Darcy has done? I mean, you and Olivia have talked
to
her quite a bit.
As far as helping Olivia and stuff like that with the websites and different things, and giving her all kinds of little
Facebook,
things to do,
Pinterest.
As far as Facebook and Pinterest, absolutely. And I tell you what, every single time there's an article, there's a PR that comes out, Darcy is on top of it.
Oh, yeah.
She's posting it everywhere.
And, you know, I subscribe to this service called Scoop It.
Yeah.
Something pop up about IRP6,
right.
And who posted it?
Darcy. Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So she is
on point. She really
it's like
is.
She's the type of person that you definitely want to have on board.
Yes.
And have them a part of your team. And you know, Darcy and all the other folks that are out there,
oh, yeah.
You know, who are supporters of a just cause and supporters of the IRP6. You know, we really love what you guys are doing. And we want to tonight, we're going to start to wrap things up just a little bit. Next week on the show, we're also going to jump back in here talking about the writ of mandamus, because there's some other things that's going to come up on that. But we also want to just legislators, folks at the federal level, there's somebody out there who knows Eric Holder. You know, there has to be. You know, we run into far too many people who say, well, yeah, I know this person or I know that person. If you are a senator out there or a senator's aide, and you are aware of how to get into Eric Holder's office, hey, if they did a special investigation for Senator Ted Stevens, then they can do it for anybody. I've said it before. You shouldn't have to be a senator. You shouldn't have to be a high-profile entertainer.
That's right.
You shouldn't have to be a friend of the president.
That's right.
In order to get some sort of...
Thank you.
You know, like we were saying, you know, why do you have to sue somebody to get a right
that is
already yours?
That's right.
You know, when people start playing these games with your life, you know, that stuff is for the birds.
And they do it so much, so often, and have done it so many times.
That's right. So we want to thank folks for joining into A Just Cause Coast to Coast tonight, where we bring education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. If you'd like to reach out to us, join us here each Thursday night on Contending for Truth Radio Network. Scott Osborne, shout out to you there. And we're here every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. If you'd like to reach us during the middle, you can call A Just Cause at 855-529-4252. 855-529-4252. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. You can also get more information about A Just Cause at www.a-justcause.com. And for more information about Free the IRP6, www.freetheirp6.org. Thanks to Nicole Casares tonight. Thanks to Abraham Bonowitz. Jay out there in Maryland. Thanks a lot. Cliff.
All right. We want to give a shout out to our productions with Dustin Jackson and Captain Kyle back there running the board and the music. We also have Il Skillo's girl who writes it up for us every time we're on. It's very much appreciated.
Awesome job.
We've got the production support crew that when it's time to, you know, we need something printed out or just a sip of water, they're always there for us. And to the truth, we know you out there, and we always appreciate it.
Hey, I forgot to say thank you to Harriet also down in Florida for Voice of the People. And Harriet, you know, we appreciate everything you've been doing and keeping us in the loop. And keeping us on your radar.
Let's not forget to have the people listening, call out to Eric Holder's office. His number is 202-514-2003. Please reach out, give him a call, tell him, investigate the case of the IRP6 in Colorado.
Hey, get involved. Get involved, people. I mean, you can get involved with the Just Cause. There are other organizations out there that you can get involved with. You know, like Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And Bishop Desmond Tutu said, if you are neutral in just in situations, we have to ensure that we keep this movement going. And we will. A Just Cause will. You know, on behalf of the families of the IRP6, You know, we want to say, you know, everyone put up a prayer for the IRP6.
Yes.
Call them by name. Exactly. Gary, David, Demetrius, Kendrick, Dave, Clinton. You know, we need to keep them in prayer. It came up earlier on the show as to, you know, well, being stuck in the mud, so to speak. Well, you know, we're moving.
Yes.
You know, we're always moving forward, and we are keeping a positive outlook on this.
And don't forget, Hurricane Nightmare can also happen to you.
That's right. If you don't get into the fight, if you don't do something, you realize this happened to you, just like it happened to the IRP6 and others that are in prison unlawfully.
Thanks for tuning in tonight. A Just Cause Coast to Coast Education Awareness.